This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Keith Kam. In half an hour, we have The Breakfast Grill. Who is in the hot seat today, Keith?
Yeah, so it's Boost Holdings. And
The juice maker.
Not the juice maker, even though it's World Water Day. So anyway, Boost Holdings CEO, Shayanta Abikun, he'll be in the hot seat with me discussing what the company and its partner, RHB Bank, will be doing with regards to their digital bank license that they got from Bank Negara 1 year ago. We're going to find out where that bank is, when we can expect to see something happen, what products they might be offering. Also, Boost, at this point, they are still in the red, and I'm just going to find out, when that's not going to be in the red anymore.
Stay tuned to that conversation after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. But in the meantime, let's take a look at what's happening in geopolitics. A friend in need is a friend indeed. And this perhaps is the maxim that comes to mind for Russian President Vladimir Putin when he speaks of President Xi Jinping of China. President Xi is on a 3-day state visit to Moscow that began on Monday, solidifying the bilateral partnership that was first announced last year prior to the start of the Beijing Winter Olympics and before the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
And although Western countries have attempted to isolate Russia from the global economy, China is still providing an economic lifeline with trade between the two countries surging to a record $190 billion in 2022. Russia has become the number two oil supplier to China and its largest gas supplier in the year since the outbreak of the war. Meanwhile, China has put forth a 12-point peace plan in a bid to mediate a ceasefire between Moscow and Kyiv. How will the outcome of the visit shape geopolitics in the year to come?
Joining us for key takeaways from the state visit is Dr. Alexei Muraviev, Associate Professor of National Security and Strategic Studies at Curtin University. Alexei, good morning. Thanks as always for joining us. What do you think China intends to signal from this state visit, given that it is President Xi's first foreign visit after being reappointed as president for a third term?
Look, I think that the Chinese are trying to send two signals here. One is China got into the taste of positioning itself as a global peace deal breaker. We need to remember that just days ago, the Chinese managed to strike a historical agreement, allegedly reconciling Saudi Arabia and Iran. And we yet to understand the full implications of that agreement. And certainly the Chinese want to present themselves as a possible peacemakers with regards to the conflict in Ukraine, even though they recognize that there would be some shortfalls because for Xi Jinping, the idea of pressuring Putin is something that I think he would find a bit difficult to do, also because, and that is linked to the second signal that China aims to say, China finds itself these days in increasing confrontation with the United States. The Biden administration hasn't been very helpful in terms of ensuring that China can actually be a balancer against Russia's ambition and Russia's aggression. We need to remember the scandal surrounding the spy balloon, constant threats to and accusations that it was China who was responsible for the outbreak of COVID. The recent announcement of the details concerning the AUKUS agreement involving us here in Australia, and the latest round of attempts to block TikTok in the UK, in the United States, etc. So even if Xi Jinping doesn't want to take sides in the conflict, I think the whole situation in Beijing, Washington relations, on one hand, then the U.S. growing overt support for Taiwan, kind of pushes him to be aligned more with what Putin is doing, and I think the whole outcome, which I'm sure we will discuss later on, of this summit has a very strong anti-U.S. flavor.
Alexei, if you could just set the stage for us as well. The relationship between Beijing and Moscow, is one more dominant than the other? Who is dependent on whom?
Well, this is a very interesting and important question, because there is a lot of speculation of who is the leader and who is the lead here in the relationship. And certainly a popular description among Western analysts is China is the dominant player because China is more powerful economically, and perhaps after the war in Ukraine, China may be more powerful militarily, even though it lacks the diplomatic experience that Russia has. But we need to once again look at the formula that brings the two countries together. They don't talk about the alliance. They say we way past the stage of alliances. And I think the continuous insistence on this formula that we're talking about, well, we as Russia, China, talking about comprehensive partnership, strategic partnership, you know, lots of fancy descriptions and lots of fancy wording. I think this is an attempt to effectively avoid the situation when the two countries will have to basically measure each other and decide who is the leader and who is going to be secondary here, because that's how normally alliances are structured. There is a dominant player, and there are those that follow the dominant power in its leads. And I think whilst Beijing will probably be thinking that it wants to be the dominant player, Russia obviously has the history of dominating China and Chinese politics over decades, if not centuries. Both countries recognize that they've got bigger things to worry about than trying to sort out who is number one here and who is number two.
Okay, interesting comments there, Alexei, in that sense. There's no real clear dominant partner for now, although both sides may think they have that advantage. What are the key outcomes to note so far from the Russia-China summit? Xi Jinping has been there since Monday. What kind of announcements have come out of their meetings?
Look, I mean, the document that the two leaders have signed is so comprehensive that we can spend hours detailing it. The key outcomes are, in my view, are as follows. First of all, the two countries agree to be nice to one another, continue to be nice to one another, and play the game that is aimed to upset the dominance of the United States through a number of ways. First of all, it's the rejection of the idea that one power can impose values on the rest of the world. I mean, it's a clear signal into Washington that both countries, we can call them autocratic regimes, reject the ideas of international rules-based order. Mm. The discussion about increasing trade and shifting towards national currencies is an attack on the U.S. dollar, and I think this is as symbolic and as and significant as other elements. Mm. Third, there is a clear geopolitical element. Yes, Putin said we can use a Chinese 12-point peace plan as the foundation for a political settlement in the Ukraine, but there hasn't been any agreement that Russia will actually agree to a ceasefire or a political settlement. It was nothing more than a declaration. However, the Russians made it very clear that they fully support China's position on Taiwan, and I think this is really significant. Secondly, China, in its statement concerning the situation in Ukraine, even though they try to kind of, you know, cloud it with a collection of generic statements, effectively stated that it recognizes Russia's strategic concerns, because there is this, you know, long formulated statement saying that when it comes to crisis, you know, considerations of all sides involved need to be taken into account. Then there was an attack on NATO, effectively stating that NATO should be a defensive alliance, and that's obviously a reflection of Russia's strategic concerns about NATO's eastward expansion. Then there was a clause about concerns with respect to the AUKUS, where Russia obviously sidelines with China, and a very overt statement that the two countries, the two militaries, will continue to exercise together. We continue to run joint maritime as well as aerial patrols. So it's a pretty powerful collection of different pieces that form this pretty strong mosaic that's supposed to demonstrate that Russia-China is on the same page, and they they're thinking long term, they're planning long term, and they're aiming to be supporting each other long term. And I think this is something that it's worthwhile noticing.
Alexei, I wonder what you would read from the fact that Japan, which has territorial disputes with both Russia and China, Prime Minister Fumio Kishida is in Kyiv at the same time that Xi Jinping is meeting with Vladimir Putin. What do you read from that?
Look, I think that's an indication that larger Asia, the Indo-Pacific, is getting increasingly involved in European affairs, and we can see that the Ukrainian conflict is becoming more and more global. I think there is no coincidence that the Prime Minister of Japan visiting Ukraine at the time when Xi Jinping visits Moscow, given the fact that Japan has problematic relations with both China and Russia, that's supposed to demonstrate that Ukraine has friends in Asia, the United States has powerful allies in Asia, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other hand, I think the visit in itself perhaps created additional push factor towards makes Beijing thinking more about taking a pro-Russian standard rather than remaining neutral, because clearly it was an attempt to slap Xi Jinping in the face and demonstrate that Japan will continue to take stand against China extensionism and Xi Jinping personally. So I think in this sense, if it was supposed to create some sort of a sense of anxiety in Beijing and Moscow, I think it actually created a sense of urgency to be stronger and closer to one another than ever before.
Okay, Alexei, we have about 30 seconds on the clock, but I really just want to very quickly ask you about the implications of the arrest warrant for President Vladimir Putin that was issued by the ICC this week. Is this more symbolic than substantive?
It is more symbolic. It would create a degree of inconvenience for the Russian leader to travel abroad, but nothing more than that.
Alexei, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Alexei Muraviev, Associate Professor of National Security and Strategic Studies at Curtin University, talking to us about some of the takeaways from the summit between President Xi Jinping and President Vladimir Putin.
And interestingly enough, while all this is going on, we've got Japan's Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, who is visiting Kyiv at the moment. I wonder if this was all timed deliberately, because Japan has beef with territorial disputes with Russia in the northern islands just above Hokkaido, and of course with China as well. But what this kind of makes me a little bit concerned is it has shades of what happened just before World War II.
I mean, you can't help but go back to that, right? Yeah. And in a way, we're only going to notice how the puzzle fits together in hindsight. So after whatever happens. So I think it's important to try and avert the course of history rather than realize, in the future that, we saw the signs coming. But in any case, it is interesting to see how geopolitics plays out. Don't forget that Japan and South Korea also recently had a rather friendly visit, which is something that the U.S. cheered on. Mm. And meanwhile, this visit between Russia and China is, as Alexei said, really meant to send a signal to the U.S. So all these things percolating in our area, something to watch for sure. It's 7:48 in the morning. We're heading into some messages. And when we come back, we're going to discuss water sustainability in Malaysia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.